Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Back in February, just before the New England Patriots, faced the Atlanta Falcons in the Super Bowl, comedian Michael Che said this on Saturday Night Live's Weekend Update.
For 3 hours, I just don't want to talk about any social issues or politics. I just want to relax, turn my brain off, and watch the blackest city in America beat the most racist city I've ever been to.
Well, last Thursday, Che came to Boston University, and he told students that he stood by those comments about Boston being the most racist city he's ever been to. Despite the social media backlash he faced, he gave an example of one particularly irate woman, and he told her, talk to your closest black friend and ask them to explain it to you. Her response? Touché. Later on Instagram, Che added, quote, listen, Boston, my grandma is racist too, but I still love her. And I still love you. So Boston undoubtedly has a very troubled history when it comes to racism. But is it still racist today? Is it the most racist city in America, as Michael Che says? And compared to what? We want to hear from you. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Well, joining me now to discuss is Jamal Crawford. He's publisher of The Blackstonian, a news and commentary website representing Boston's black community. Jamal Crawford, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Absolutely. My pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Also with us on the line today from Washington is Michael Curry. He's the immediate past president of the Boston branch of the NAACP. He's currently a member of the National NAACP Board of Directors. Michael Curry, it's good to have you back as well.
Good to be back.
Well, so let me just get a first take from both of you. Jamal, we'll start with you. What do you think of Michael Che? Do you think Boston is the most racist city?
Absolutely, and I've thought that longer than he's probably been alive. I'm kind of blown away. First of all, I don't really care what Michael Che thinks. We're not talking about a social scientist. He's not a revolutionary.
He's a comedian.
He's a comedian. And ultimately, this country is so fascinated with celebrity that so all of a sudden we needed Michael Che to describe racism in Boston. So while he made a point that is true, I don't think that he even understands the depths and the nuances that play that are factors here dealing with the ever-present problem of race in Boston since Plymouth Rock landed on us 45 minutes away.
Michael Curry, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like in corporate America, people used to say, know your hallway reputation. And the reality is, it's like Bostonians don't know our reputation. So if you go across this country and whether people came to Boston for college, for a job, or you lived and grew up in Boston like many of us, it's not a secret. It's commonly known that whether it's in the service industry or job market or in housing or in education, that Boston has entrenched racism that looks different than Alabama, but it is racism nonetheless.
Okay, so you guys are making some pretty interesting points here, but let me just ask you both. I mean, Jamal, I take your point about Michael Che being a comedian, but I think he riled up a lot of people when he said it's the most racist city in America. And you don't seem to disagree with that more than any other city in America.
It's a known fact. It makes all the lists. It's always in the top five.
To this day?
You know the stats. This is a news organization. When we're talking about gentrification, top five cities, I think, you know, it just made the list again. You're talking about the income inequality gap. You're talking about the wealth gap. And to Curry's point, people don't think it's like Alabama or whatever. I actually put the point forth that Alabama and Mississippi, and I call this Bosstown, Massachusetts or Mississippi, that we have to look at the fact that Alabama and Mississippi, you go down there, they got black mayors. They have black police chiefs, black fire chiefs, black heads of the school department, black doctors, black hospitals. So I would make the contention that Boston is worse than Alabama, Mississippi. And as Malcolm X said, anytime you south of Canada, you down south.
Michael Curry?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I've ever tried to categorize what's the worst city. I think, you know, it looks different. So the reality is, are we dying of every disease, almost every disease at a high rate? That's in pockets throughout the country, right? So if you talk about our unemployment rate being 2 and 3 times higher, that's everywhere across the country. But I think people come here with this high expectation that Boston's going to be the land of folks who look at the African-American community, people of color, differently, and they're kind of shocked when they go to a restaurant and the person seems to be unwilling to serve them, or shocked that they're there and can afford the meal. So I don't know if it's the worst. I've been to some places where, to me, Chicago, New York, Detroit, is just as bad, but I can see why people say that.
Now, Jamal, you were talking a little earlier, you made some important points about structural ways that you can absolutely measure racism or institutional racism and how it plays out across Boston. And I'll dig into that more with both of you in just a second. But tell me, just on a day-to-day basis in your life, how are you feeling this?
Racism?
Yeah. No, like, tell me.
From the moment that I wake up to the moment that I go to sleep, and sometimes I dream about these things, it's a constant factor. And, you know, and I'm in the work. So I'm not just a guy who likes fish. I work at the fish market, so I often smell like fish. So, yeah, this is an all-encompassing aspect of life. Not just, oh, focusing on racism, but how to navigate and survive through it, despite it all. Not, you know, it's like I am not because of, but I am in spite of.
Yeah. I mean, I know I don't want this line of questioning to sound totally moronic. I don't want it to be like, hey, you're the African-American man. Teach me about racism. That's not what I mean entirely. But I really feel like it's important for, let's be honest, for people listening who are not Black Bostonians to get an understanding of why you're saying this. So, like, so specifically, like, happens?
Different treatment in the banks, different treatment in the hospitals, different treatment in educational institutions, different treatment with relationships that people may, my reputation or my image precedes me, and they say, we don't want to deal with that guy, with nothing to base it on other than the fact that I'm unapologetically Black. So there's a lot of factors, you know, that happen every day. Let's look at the policies in the city. Let's look at the employment rates in the city. And I'm not just talking about guys who are working mid-level employment, but let's look at who runs it. Like, who are the big Black people in the city? If you're not dribbling a ball or something, you're nobody. And even if we look at our sports teams, everybody's favorite sports team up here, basketball, Boston Celtics. What's their logo? Why are we the city that has the only National Basketball Association team that is directly related to a culture? We're not the Eagles. We're not the Bulls. We're not the Falcons. We are the Celtics. And the image is a white Irish man. New England Patriots. What was their old logo? A Patriot guy bent over in a position that looked like he was about to tackle me. Are the Patriots friendly? Or have they been friendly to us? No. Once again, this is not just what we're discussing, racism. This is the origins of racism. Original 13 colonies. The educational institutions around here became the intellectual apologizers to determine the fact and justify that racism is real. Black people have smaller brains and we grow tails at night. This came from all your elite institutions in this area.
True. But also, and Michael Curry, let me pull you back in here. I mean, Jamal is absolutely right to point out that, like, look, Harvard University in the 18th and 19th century was churning out a lot of academics and papers and national leaders who definitely found all sorts of justification for deep institutional racism. But on the other hand, look, I'm not going to be the defender of Boston history here, but I just want to point out the subtleties. Like, what about the abolitionist movement? I mean, are we just gonna sweep that aside? Is that not significant here, Michael?
Yeah, both things can be true, right? You know, when I think about, you know, my study of Boston with the Garrison family, starting with William Lloyd Garrison and his work to end slavery, and you think about his work with Frederick Douglass, and you go forth through the abolitionist movement, and you can go through time. There are always stories, movements within Boston that were liberating, that were contributing to the liberation of African people and to our struggle for justice. That's really a distraction, though, because I think, to Jamal's point, is that the other thing is true, too, which is, I always tell people, I quote the movie from the movie Sixth Sense, where the little boy says to Bruce Willis, "I see dead people." And I use that as a reference to say that when you know what racism is, first of all, most folks can't even define it. They don't even know what it looks like. And they think if you're not hanging someone from a tree or calling them the N-word, then you can't be racist. It's much more perverse and entrenched than that. And it's cultural and it's institutional and it's personal.
Yeah.
So the reality is, we have to have an honest conversation that looks at how it manifests itself. And I tell people, go and sit in MCAD, the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination, for a day, and look at the rampant cases that go into that agency of people sharing stories of horrible bosses, horrible neighbors, establishments where there's public accommodation violations. It's rampant, but it's really a matter of whether Bostonians want to accept that it's true and stop living on the examples where we've shown that we are a more liberal city.
Yeah. Jamal?
Well, I want a couple points. The abolitionist movement. So even when we have these things of where there's supposed to be these good white people who are doing things, you know, for the greatness of black people and working with us, there's even racism there. So the abolitionist groups at the time did not want to even link up with the black women, the Negro women, because they said, hey, we're for abolition and we agree on points, but we can't work together because then that would like signify like equality or something. We're not equal. We just happen to agree on a point. We don't know what the motivating factor behind why people said slavery should end or there should be abolition. And oftentimes it was not just for the wonders of black people. They had their own personal agendas. As now you look at the relationship between like Black Lives Matter, there's a big debate going on now, all the women's march and all this women's stuff, right? But the black women missing in D.C. right now, not so much. And I didn't see the fanfare of the pink hats out there and all that. Same thing with all this. So you have white churches here in Boston, great liberal people, Black Lives Matter sign in the front yard. Great. Can I organize at your church, though? Or is it just the sign? I need more than that.
We are talking about whether or not Boston is a racist city or possibly the most racist city in America. And you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. We're getting a lot of action here on social media. Let's read a couple of these tweets. Let's see here. Bruce Lucier says, he tweeted us, he said, when I was in the Air Force, a black friend of mine from L.A. had no problem saying Boston was a racist city. AEA sent us a tweet saying Henry Louis Gates isn't getting arrested trying to get into his own house if he's not black.
That he himself who perpetuates racism by being subservient to it.
I'll invite Dr. Gates on to respond to that someday.
Please bring us on for an online debate, please.
Samantha Ballard says, look on local Boston news, by far the most racist and amount of racist comments I see on social media. And Leanne Arguello, sorry Leanne if I pronounced your name improperly, she tweets us, I moved to Boston from Texas and I noticed right away how racist the people in this city are to African Americans. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Yella is calling from Newton. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. My name's Yella. I live in Newton, and I was just calling to say that my seven-year-old goes to a Newton public school, and she's constantly getting called brown, black, why you look like that, you're dirty. And just an incident where my 14-year-old son got called the N-word, and we went to school to discuss it, and it was like, the parents didn't even want to look me in the face or even acknowledge the fact that their child just called my child the N-word. They offered no apology, none whatsoever. But it's just like, it's coming from the parents. And as parents, I told my son after that meeting, I said, you don't hate that person because you call him the N-word. You don't hate him because he's white. Hate him because he just don't like you as a human being. And don't think that's how all white people are going to call you the N-word, all white people. It's like, I constantly have to make excuse for other people's behavior towards my kids. And I don't understand that.
Yella, thank you so much for your call. Michael Curry, respond to her.
Yeah, I mean, she should know that her case isn't isolated. That's a common story. When we, in my years as president of the NAACP, we would get hundreds of these cases a year. And they would be the more egregious, easier to accept examples of using the N-word. But then there were the other things, like the African-American who knew that he or she was the most qualified for the job but couldn't get into the C-suite. It was the example of a woman who came to me and said, I applied for housing in Quincy, was told that there was many apartments available. And when I showed up, the guy didn't want to invite me in and then started to tell me about that there was an African-American who lived there before me and was smoking weed, so he kicked him out and then told me he didn't have any space available. But she questioned whether it was race. So there is, I mean, these examples are, they abound, and there are many of them, and there are many people trying to struggle with how to deal with them. We just are resistant to dealing with the fact that racism is rampant in Boston. Ask a Boston police officer if racism is true in Boston. Ask a black nurse or a black accountant. Or anyone from name any company that you can pull them out and do a polling. It's real.
Jamal?
I just want to say to the sister's point, first of all, sister, I'm sorry for what you and your children have had to go through. And yes, as Mr. Curry says, it's all too common, unfortunately, and it's been happening since I was a kid and before. Happened to me, too. One thing I do want to say, though, is in your city of Newton, you have a mayor in Seti Warren. And Seti Warren has tried to address this issue, and I know has undertaken a new initiative to deal with racism in his city. And I encourage you to supersede and leapfrog over the school people and contact the mayor's office and let him know about this and see if he can't unstick your situation a little bit and be helpful. And also, too, sister, blackstonian.com is the website. Reach out to me and I'd like to turn you on to some other services and whatnot, either to assist your children or kind of navigate that situation in the schools, because I have another good friend of mine who just went through the same situation and worse in the same city.
And we'll have a link, by the way, to the Blacksonian at our website, radioboston.org. You know, we're living in the tech age, and so people are fact-checking me as this segment's going out live. And Steve Spaulding just sent a tweet saying, why does Megna keep saying Che, Michael Che called Boston the most racist city in America? He said it's the most racist city he's been to. And Steve Spaulding, you are right. So thank you for that fact check. But let's turn around and get a couple more calls in.
We need to get him on Trump.
Brian's calling from Brookline. You're on the air, Brian.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm an educator, and I look at this from a teacher's perspective and also a transportation kind of perspective, too. We live in a city that I recently actually did the mapping myself, looking up where Boston public schools are located in comparison to where our public transportation goes. And if you really look at it, our communities of color, students don't have ways to easily access our schools. I mean, it's an institutionalized system that's put in place that makes it much more difficult for kids to take the subway to school or take buses to school on a daily basis. And these are our young students of color. And I say to my work as an educator on a daily basis, when I bring it up to people, why as a special educator are more students of color being identified? And people just, I've had administrators just say that's the way it is right here in Boston. So it's happening all the time.
Yeah, Brian, thank you so much for calling. A lot to dig into there. Michael Curry, just I'm going to turn this back to you again. A lot having to do with schools, where they're located, how young African-American students are treated.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because people don't know how much goes into this work of civil rights, social justice. So I'm known for saying something that actually came from a colleague of mine, which is if you're not at the table, you're on the table or you're on the menu. And the reality is when you're coming up with a transportation plan and where the new routes will go and what the times of service will be, you have to have someone there that can point out the equity issues. When the school committee is meeting to talk about a new school building and upgrades and renovation, you have to be there. You have to have folks at the table, preferably on the school committees, preferably pressuring and putting pressure on the school district to deliver on the equity within the system. That goes across the board, and oftentimes we're not at the table, so we're on the table.
Mm. Let's get another call here. Joe's calling from Milford. You're on the air, Joe.
Hello. I used to live in Boston. I'm 68 years old. I just wanted to say it used to be worse. I mean, it may look really bad, but it used to be a lot worse. And I see some progress in my lifetime. Not as much as I would like to see, of course. But
Joe, let me just jump in here. Give me a specific sure. example of the progress you think you've been seeing.
Okay. Progress. I'm a retired person, but I worked for a number of banks and insurance companies around the Boston area. I worked with no black professionals. There were none. It was just unthinkable. Before I retired, I did, work with black professionals. That's just one example. There was a time when a black person wouldn't dare set foot in the North End.
Mm-hmm.
Now you see black people on Hanover Street, not as many as, white people, but I mean, it was simply not safe to go to the North End or to South Boston.
Joe, thank you so much for your call. Jamal Crawford, I mean, some measure of progress, Jamal?
And I'd like to respond to that with truth.
Absolutely. Sure, Michael.
And I'm going to say no, and this is a dangerous thing. It's when white people get to tell you what their vision of, are things better now? So that's great, but no. So here it is. What we have to deal with is when I was a kid, More black people owned homes. If you go back in the days, the 50s, the 20s, whatnot, more black home ownership, more black businesses and black dollars circulated within the community. So no, in my perspective, things have gotten worse. We weren't in housing projects and government housing. Obviously, the drug epidemic wasn't as bad as it was until they first introduced heroin. And now we know that it's not a conspiracy theory that the government introduced heroin and crack cocaine into the inner cities of America to destabilize the black families. So a lot of this stuff that at some point seemed like you were talking about UFOs and Bigfoot has now come out. And while he might think it's better, I will say, no, they're just better at masking it. We're in a technology age. So, you know, now there's an app for that. And, you know, it's just it's different. It's slicker. But I think his individual experience, which I will not discount, does not make my life better at all. And I would not at all count how you judge racism by how many people work at the banks.
Michael Curry.
Yeah, I mean, I sit around the table on the national board with folks who were the architects of the civil rights movement, and they often remind me that things are better. So I don't argue that. I mean, the bar is not whether I don't look to say, okay, we're not slaves anymore, we should feel good about it. The bar is higher for me. It's about whether we have equal access and opportunity, whether the achievement gap's been eliminated and mass incarceration's been addressed, whether children, no matter what color they are, can reach their full potential. And if you can't answer those questions as being yes, then we don't have the progress that we need. So I always get frustrated with especially white liberal allies who want to say, well, you know what, at least you're not a slave. At least you're, you know, you can sit at the front of the bus if you want to. That's not the measure of progress that this generation is looking forward to.
Right.
We want to now achieve that American dream, that true version, Big D, democracy, and that we've not gotten there yet.
I want to see if I can get at least one more call in here. Rob is calling from Mashpee. You're on the air, Rob.
Hey, how are you? You know, I kind of have a comment. First of all, I want to start off by saying I think black people get captured on a daily basis across America. There's no denying that. I'm all for trying to rectify whatever is out there. In the 70s, I was bused. I grew up in South Boston, and I used to be able to jump over my fence into my community school. It was all great. Because I was on the even side of the street, I was bused over to Roxbury, to the M.L. King School. And I'd like to make a statement that I think there's racism on both sides. I went to a safe neighborhood. All of a sudden, the buses were bombed. I got cut to my face. I couldn't use the bathroom. People called me everything. I was beaten up on maybe like a weekly basis. I would come home at the end of the day, and I was a news junkie, and I would hear Chet and Nat on Channel 5 saying, problems in Southie again.
Rob, forgive me for jumping in here. I don't mean to cut you off. I'm just running down on time really fast. I want to get Jamal and Michael to respond to you and your personal experience. Thank you so much for your call. Jamal, you're shaking your head.
Yeah,
here.
Right, because people don't know the definitions and the differences between racism, prejudice, bigotry, and all that. And see, that's the problem. We're doing a lot of talking about a subject that we really haven't spent a great amount of time studying and analyzing so that we can be better equipped to actually have, you know, a credible something to say. So for me, first of all, no, black people cannot be racist. Here's why.
It's quite simple.
Black people will say, I don't like that white person. White people smell funny. I don't like them. I don't like the way they look at me. That's prejudice. That's bigotry. That's that. Racism is prejudice plus power, because I cannot like white people all day, but I can't make sure that you don't have a job, a place to live, proper housing, proper health care. I don't have any impact on your wealth, your income, all this type of stuff. So what we're talking about, race is a structure that is built that benefits white people on autopilot. They don't have to contribute it to it. And if they say we don't want it, it doesn't stop. It's a thing. It goes. Racism goes. And black people, unfortunately, do not have the power to do that in reverse. I wish we did. I'd like to show people what it looks like.
Michael Curry, I'm afraid to say we've only got a couple seconds left here.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I want to just be able to ask, I mean, how can we make it better?
Yeah, I think making it better goes to Jamal's point that we're having a conversation about something we don't understand. You got to study this stuff. You need to know the difference between bigotry and racism. You need to know the lived experiences of other people. You need to understand that you could be from a privilege of being white. And I think we've not had that conversation because we want to assume that everyone's on equal footing. So if I can be hateful because of your race and you can be hateful, then it's all the same. No. There is hundreds of years of institutional racism and action that speak to the difference between the two. But we don't want to have that conversation. Credit to the mayor of Boston for starting a conversation about race, but the true challenge is to whether this city is ready to have it, to continue it, and whether everyone's included and invited to the conversation.
Michael Curry is the immediate past president of the Boston branch of the NAACP. He's a current member of the National NAACP Board of Directors. Joining us today from Washington, Michael Curry, thank you as always.
Thank you.
And Jamal Crawford, creator and editor of the Blackstonian, a news and commentary website representing Boston's black community. Jamal Crawford, thank you so much.
Thank you as well, and peace to you, Mike.
And to all the folks that I wasn't able to get on the air, my apologies. Send us your comments at radioboston.org, or you can always tweet us at Radio Boston. Let's keep this conversation going. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.